Associate Professor for A.T. Still University's College of Graduate Health Studies in the Health Education Department. And my research and interest area includes online student wellness. And so what we're going to talk about is online wellness resources for graduate level students, self-directed or facilitated. And it's basically a comparison between two studies that were conducted at the same university. And one was more of a self-directed wellness resource study, and the other was facilitated. And I have no relationships to disclose. And since the underlying theme is really wellness, and you've been sitting now for a good 40 minutes, if you need to get up and stretch, feel free to do so. We're going to talk about physical wellness. If those of you who are extroverts are about bursting to say hi to somebody, social wellness, say hi. If you're an introvert, just quietly read the slide of the objectives. And But we will be discussing these various, covering these various objectives. Let me get to the right page and put my readers on. We're going to look at the need for online wellness resources, and while the study population was graduate level students, this is actually applicable to all online students. We're also going to discuss why we need these resources and talk about the wellness model used for the research studies and the influence of balance in wellness dimensions on student success. And just a brief literature review, which they may have readers. When you look up, it's all blurry, and you look down. I have to get bifocals, I think. But anyway, one of the things that we find with online student wellness literature, there's just not much of it. So first is the undergraduate versus graduate level student needs. And this is more general, not in residential and possibly online. But graduate students are often balancing work, school, and family a little bit more than the typical undergraduate students. And they may have been out of school for a little while, so they're reacclimating and learning new technologies, learning how to study again, those kind of things. They have to worry about daycare, flexible scheduling. So there's just a little bit more worry that goes into the graduate level student, possibly. Of course, there's plenty of worries for undergraduate students. They're just different types. So, you know, undergraduates are more worried about being away from home the first time and trying to balance that self-directed learning experience versus being told exactly what to do when and balancing their time. I have a freshman in college, so we're going to do that right now. Online students may feel a sense of isolation. And if you were an online student or you've taken any kind of online class, you know exactly what that feels like. I actually have this is why it's an area of interest. I got my degree online, and now I teach online. So I've gotten it from both ends, and I see how the balance can be a little bit off, and so we need some research and some opportunities in the area. But online students may feel like they have less access to even just something simple as technical support. You can't just run down to the IT department to get your computer looked at. You have to go through a whole phone line and, you know, contact the people, and it can be a challenge. They also have a general disconnect with other students and faculty. And teaching now online for, 6 years, I think? I have to do math. But I hear that a lot. And we try and make the effort to connect with our students because they just see a computer screen. It's like when you're calling AT&T, you know, you don't know there's actually somebody on the other side of that screen. And so we want them to know that we are actually, I forgot to start my timer, so if I go over a little bit. You got it. Okay. So if we let them know we're real people and we connect, we try and do maybe some Skypes or Google Plus, some kind of hangout to let them know I'm actually a person on the other side of the computer and not, you know, it's not all just a computer talking back at them. They have lack of access to wellness resources. So even if they're available at the residential portion, they can't go to the fitness center. They can't go to the nutritionist or the nurse or the counselor. You know, they can't access those as readily because they're all over the world. 68% of academic leaders agree that online students need more discipline than the residential student, more self-discipline. Retention of online students is more difficult, but the reasons for that are hard to define. So that's one area, we haven't looked at that, but that is actually, if anybody's looking for an area of study, that might be a good one, is why it is more difficult to retain the online student. I tend to think it might have something to do with the stuff we're talking about, but I can't tell you that for sure. According to Allen and Semien, and they do every year, they have published a Sloan Consortium, and it shows the growth of online student learning and all kinds of other great statistics, but I'm going to just tell you a little bit. They've been collecting data since 2003, and online course registration has steadily increased. In 2002, there were approximately 16.6 million, which is a lot for 2002 if you think about it, online students, but in 2013, that number grew to almost 21 million people, and that's people taking at least one online course. It's not full-time, so that's how they categorize theirs, but that's a lot of people out there that need some resources that maybe not don't have access to them. From 2002 to 2013, the compound annual growth rate of students taking online courses was 15.2%, and while the growth of higher education students in general was just about 2%. So a little bit, it's growing. It's been steadily decreasing since 2009. In the peak of the growth, it was at about 20%, and last year it was just a growth of just under 4%, so it is decreasing. There was like a little bell curve, but it's still growing. In general, online enrollments have increased at a rate far in excess of those of the overall higher education. In 2014, the percent of academic leaders rating learning outcomes in online education as the same or superior to the face-to-face remained unchanged over time at 74.1%. So they know it's important. And in 2014, the proportion of chief academic leaders reported online learning is critical to their long-term strategy, reaching a new high of 70.8%. And again, so that academic leaders and the folks at the institutions are recognizing that online learning is here to stay, and it's becoming more and more important to the bottom line financially and also just their resources they can offer to the students. For wellness, online graduate wellness initiatives, well, that's pretty easy. There's not a lot out there. There are a lot of residential student resources available at some of those I already mentioned, additional things. There's just, even if there's stuff that's online, if you were to do an online search, you would find online resources, but what they primarily do is direct you to go to, it tells you how to access the residential resources, or it might give you a website you can go to. There's just not a lot of interactive or practical things that somebody can use. And so we need to really focus on that. Now that it's online is established and here to stay, we know it's an area of need. And student success in the literature is linked to balance and dimensions of wellness. Student success overall, that applies to graduate, undergraduate, residential, and online. So a little bit of background about our institution, A.T. Still University, has six campuses, or six schools, and we have what's called a student, Stillwell Student Wellness Program, and their tagline is, I am my own first healer. The student wellness program was designed to encourage students' health and wellness throughout their educational experience, enabling them to reach their maximum potential in mind, body, and spirit. And we practice under the osteopathic philosophy. The program uses the distinctive osteopathic philosophy of holistic medicine to encourage students to be mindful of their wellness and health throughout their academic studies at ATSU. And the reason is that the founder of osteopathic medicine and our university is Andrew Taylor Still. And so, we kind of follow in his path all these years later, and about 125 years ago or so. But he believed that an active body helped nurture an inquisitive and informed mind. And so our program is named after Dr. Still, and it was founded in 1991. And again, this is the residential program. It's one of the most extensive and successful wellness programs among U.S. graduate schools. It's been recognized. True to Dr. Still's philosophy, this holistic approach to healthcare is distinctive of ATSU. Our university actually has, as I mentioned, six schools, and our total enrollment for 2014 was 3,314. And so that's spread amongst the schools. We have two medical schools, two dental schools. One is a health sciences school. And then we have our online branch. We are the smallest of them. And well, we're growing actually. We were, the online school actually had 421 in 2014, but it's almost doubled now because we kind of consolidated some of the online programs that were with one of the other schools. So it's kind of fun. Population is growing. For the residential students, their wellness program, they have access to fitness facilities, and we have campuses in Missouri and Arizona. So in Missouri, they have an on-campus fitness facility. In Arizona, they have memberships to the YMCA. Every year, once a year, they have physicians available to do screening, and they screen for everything, and it's all free to the students. They can go and have an annual screening, cardiovascular risk, immunizations, nutrition, and then just do a complete history of their medical. And because, you know, we're an osteopathic school, they also look at the musculoskeletal system. So, twice a year, the residential students can also take a fitness assessment. And they set it up, and they have the physicians come down, and students and other professionals also help. Some of our senior students will come. But they do a body fat analysis, flexibility, strength training, agility, VO2 max, sit-up, and vertical jump. And I've been through the assessments. I used to work on a Missouri campus, and it's pretty thorough. You're worn out by the end of the day, but you know exactly where you stand. And they offer it twice a year, so then you can do some comparisons on your own to see if you participate in these initiatives. They also offer it to faculty and staff, and they can get discounts on insurance. So we have a really, really good comprehensive wellness program in general. The program is directed by a central planning committee, and it's got seven teams that match the wellness dimensions that we cover, and each of the team represents one of those specific dimensions. And so this is our seven dimension wellness model. And I won't go through them now based on time, but if you have any questions about what any of those wellness dimensions, that was sort of what we use as a definition, just let me know. I'm happy to provide that. But the important concept of the Stillwell philosophy is to practice and promote a healthy lifestyle. Students first must understand and integrate wellness practices into their own lives. Wellness at ATSU is defined as a balance of the seven dimensions, and as I said, we implement programming throughout the year. And even just to give you an example, the intellectual team might offer, because our students are all in the health sciences, so they're focused on studying medicine, studying dentistry, studying athletic training, or whatever their field is, but they might have a real interest in writing, creative writing, or art. And so our intellectual team offers those other types of programming. The teams are made up of a team leader, which is a faculty or staff member, and then we have student volunteers. And in both campuses, they have the teams, and they are very active. I was the emotional team leader at our Missouri campus for 3 years, and we really did a lot of fun things. We did stress ball making activities and water gun fights and all kinds of good things. So, but they really get into it, and these students, you know, are such high stress students that they need those kind of things. So as I mentioned, I'm actually going to compare two studies in regard to online student wellness. So one of them was conducted from 2007 to 2008 was the data collection and evaluation. The other one was 2011 and 12, and so there was a slight difference in years between them. But it's interesting to compare the two. This recruitment procedures, so the students from within the institution's online population, we stuck to 100% online students, not any of our students who are taking a few online classes. So they were 100% online students were recruited via email blast. And our students are located all over the US, and we have several overseas as well. For both studies, similar emails were sent. They were both timed at about the same time before the session was to begin, and the content of the emails were very similar. In the first study, the emails were sent by the researcher, me, and in the second study, the first was sent by one of our staff members, but they had both of our researcher, we had two researchers there, and both of our names and contact information were listed in there. The convenient sampling of the institutional, it was a convenient sampling of the institutional online population, as I said. In the first study, We reached out to 389 students, and that consisted of all of our enrollment at the time. In the second study, we decided to focus on first-term students. And because the online school has grown over the years, which is nice, we had 272 first-term students that we were able to reach out to. And we did, the first study was conducted at a one-time, one-term go, and the second was a little more longitudinal. We did three terms in a row. We kind of kept recruiting until we got a sample that we could actually make some reports from. So in study A, it was divided into two groups. The intervention group, which had a mean of n of 23, and let me see what I put on this one. Yeah, and then we had a intervention and a comparison group. As you can see, it was on 22. I'm going to focus on, for study A, the intervention group, and really not mention much about the comparison group because all they did was take the pre and post test. And since the presentation is about the facilitated versus non-facilitated from now on. When I talk about study A, it's going to be the intervention group. So the mean percentage age in the first group was 40, with the majority, 67% is female. Relationship status questions showed 61.1% were married and 94% were employed. And so study B, which was the first-time students, the mean participant age was 34, a little bit lower, with a range of 23 to 56 years. Participants were geographically diverse for both of them. We have the same student population. For the study B, the majority of the cohort are female, 65%, so very close, and married, 56%, and employed, 56%. For some reason, the employed was a lot lower in that one. So the wellness assessment that we used was TestWell. Oh, already? Holy smokes, okay. All right, let me go through this really quickly then. So TestWell is a valid and reliable assessment tool that we used. We used a college edition, it's 100 question, and it adequately asked information about the dimensions of wellness that we use in our school. And TestWell is, if you're interested, through the National Wellness Institute, and it's quite affordable. You can see the pre and post-test completion rates. And this is what was interesting, and this is where the big question is. In study A, we had an N of 18 that completed the pre-test, while 10 completed the post-test. Study B, look at that. We had 43 completed the pre-test, and only 2, and this is over the 3 terms, completed the post-test. So why did they do that? That's the big question, and that's what we're going to try and find out. Due to time, okay, just to give it a little bit, the wellness assessment results, I'm actually going to not really spend a lot of time in that right now, because basically it showed in general, in study A, there was a bit of a difference. Well, I'll just read them real quick. For example, increases in self-reported wellness behaviors in the area of physical wellness. For the test well, if they scored below 60, it was poor, based on how they ranked everything. 60 to 79 is good, and 80 to 100 is excellent. So in study A, there was some interesting results. So in the area of physical fitness, between pre and post, it increased from 42.67 to 52. Areas of emotional increased as well, and there was an increase in emotional management, and that was for study A, for group A. For group B, everybody rated as good to excellent. So there was an increase in self-perceptions, and again, this is all self-assessment. But the most interesting was the pre-test scores for the experimental group, and emotional management actually is the only one that went up statistically. Physical management. Blackboard was the learning management system used for both, and back when the first study was completed, it was called WebCT. For group A, it included a facilitated weekly assignments, journaling, announcements, and so some direction. And in group B, study B, they were just basically given access to the source, to the site. And they could basically explore, based on what their pre-test results were, explore on their own the area that they wanted to look. So in study A, the student access, they got access to the site when they agreed to volunteer and when the term started. And in study B, they got access to the wellness resources after they took the wellness assessment. So study A was set up in a term format. Study B, we started at the beginning of the term, but they didn't get access. And we gave them all both access for 8 weeks. Okay, so as I mentioned, it was a convenient sample drawn from one institution of health education students, and so it's hard to generalize that to the population. And as I said, the second study included first-term students. It relied on self-reported data and assessment information. The first study was conducted by a student, while the second studied by faculty, and that may have been sort of had an influence on that. Students had no incentive whatsoever to participate. There were no grades, no. They didn't even get a t-shirt. You know, they got nothing but feeling good. And for study B, only first-time students were invited. And so once they got into it, the reality of balancing everything may hit them pretty hard, which could explain why we had such a strong decrease in post-test results. So discussion, greater participation in facilitated course contradicts the adult learning theory, which means that, you know, adult learning theory says that students want to, or adult learners are self-directed, but the fact that the self-directed course had such a low retention rate contradicts that. The facilitated course where they were given an announcement and directed had a much greater retention rate. So that's kind of interesting, I think. And more students who were involved in the facilitated course also completed the post-test. So again, not only retention throughout the course, they turned in assignments each week, but they also participated. And and awareness and the need for balance and dimensions of wellness may not actually lead to action. So they did know they needed it, they said they did, they wanted to, but then they didn't really follow through. Real quick implications, there's an interest and a need for wellness programming. The research shows that. But it appears there are benefits to facilitator interaction, and further research is needed. Thank you.